So welcome to the Series 5 premiere of Conversational Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
Tamsin.
Hello.
And Maggie.
Hi.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. And since it's the Series 5 premiere, we have a very special episode planned, as we have a very special guest joining us today to answer some of our burning questions. Introducing Callan Maiva Paris, otherwise known as Mega from the tribe.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So for this very special episode, Callan has kindly agreed to give up some of his time to answer some of our burning questions about his appearance towards the end of Series 4. The panel and I will then dive into Series 5, Episode 1 itself, and then Callan will join us again towards the end to answer our questions about his development in Series 5. Alright, so yeah, before we dive into the episode, we have to start off with a very burning question that I'm sure you must have been taken aback by being approached to participate in this podcast. So yeah, does it surprise you that the tribe has such a strong following even to this day?
Yes, I have to say it really does still surprise me every time somebody brings up the tribe this long after we finished. It's great. I think it's so cool. I'm so happy to be part of something that had that lasting an impression on people.
Did you ever expect it to have this long-lasting effect on people?
No, not at all. I stumbled across. I had no idea about the show until I got a phone call I'd auditioned and I hadn't gotten any role on the show, and then they called me back. I think a year later or years later, just one evening on my personal phone, and asked me to if I could quickly on short notice join the show like the next day.
Wow, that is short notice.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of actors who had just left or run away.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
and so they needed someone quickly to come in and fill the space and take over this character that they'd written. And I guess I was still on their speed dial.
Yeah, definitely. They went you there and then next day. Yeah, they obviously left a lasting impression.
Yeah, you know, I guess I wasn't who they were looking for at the time, because I think I originally auditioned for Tom's role of Ram.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, and then I didn't get it, obviously. And then when they had that little emergency, they called me.
Yeah, so I mean, that answers my question I was going to ask you next about how did you initially get the role. Yeah, our regular listeners will of course know who we are talking about here, but for anyone new or not in the know, the two actors involved here are Jamie, who played the role of Chloe, and Aiden, who played the role of Ved. But have you ever rewatched the show back to see yourself?
Actually, just recently we got we subscribed to the Amazon Prime streaming service, and we found the show on there, and so I could watch the series for the first time that I was in.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was hilarious. It was great. You know, I had such a good time on that, making that show. I made so many good friends. Mm-hmm. And we had such a great time. And I had no idea that it was so popular, because nobody really knew about it in New Zealand.
Yeah, that's the one fact that I keep hearing everywhere else. Like, it was huge, but not in New Zealand.
No, I think it played at like Sunday at 3 o'clock or something. So hungover students knew it. Otherwise, no one else.
Right. So yeah, one of the major aspects that the panel love about the character of Mega is his very nonchalant and hard to read exterior. Someone who's always constantly doing a calculated assessment of people, though not quite understanding people and their emotions.
Yeah.
Like reading that or hearing that, like, I've read that you classify yourself as an extrovert. So what was it like having to play someone so guarded as Mega?
Well, that's funny. You know, when I read that and I saw that, I said that I was an extrovert. I honestly can't remember saying that, because it's quite the opposite. I was the class clown at school, I think, but I think most of that was just sort of a way to distract people from the how odd I was. As a kid. So yeah, it was interesting for me to play that role because I had no idea how to do it, really. I asked Tom how I should approach it, and he was we kind of found that we were acting the opposites. You know, he was going for full, very big and wild, and I was going for a very subdued kind of balance to his performance. We just thought it would work well that way.
No, it definitely
But yeah, it's funny, when I read that question, I forgot that I'd said that.
did.
That's the thing, you know, there's a lot of these questions that we asked or answered were from, yeah, maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. It's like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite memory from playing Mega or during filming?
So, I mean, a favorite memory, I think, oh man, there was a lot. I enjoyed the fun that I would have with Caleb and James and Matt, and just being silly with each other. You know, it was just a lot of fun. There was a lot of laughing, and I felt really bad for wasting everyone's time because I was having such a good time. But yeah, just being able to laugh with your friends at work every day, I think that was my favorite thing.
No, that's the best thing. If you can laugh at work with your friends, that
Yeah,
makes life so much better.
and you get paid for it, so it's like, yeah.
Double win, yeah. So, yeah, one of Mega's defining moments really early on, which really cemented him in a lot of people's minds, was his, albeit brief, connection to Tai San. Yeah, there was a lot of ambiguity as to what his connection was, with just some small dialogue revealing that Lex wasn't the only one to have moved on. And with Tai San also mentioning that Mega had reprogrammed her into a techno. So, yeah, I know you were brought on very last minute, but like, were you ever aware of the situation that was supposed to happen between the two?
No, I think they kind of tried to keep it as vague as possible because they had no idea really what would happen with my character, you know, like I was on a monthly contract, so I never knew
Oh.
every month if I was going to be there the next month, you know. I would read it from month to month if I was still on. And so I think they wanted to just keep it open because we would talk about that as well. We would wonder what they had planned, but no, they never told us anything. They just said, maybe, you know, who knows. They wanted to keep their options open, I think.
That's fair.
But yeah, I mean, I would have been happy to play that angle with Michelle.
Yeah, it would have been really interesting to see how that would have progressed with Mega, Tai San, and Lex.
Yeah, that would have been fun to play with, I think.
All right, panel, so let's jump into the Series 5 premiere. So, Series 5, Episode 1, the screenplay was done by David Fox. It was directed by Julian McSweeney, and the episode synopsis read out by Callan.
The technos have been defeated, but the city is not out of danger yet. Zoot has returned and is stalking both the streets and Ebony's nightmares. Mega and Java conspire while rogue technos kidnap Celine, demanding Ram as ransom. But where has he disappeared to?
That synopsis makes this sound way more interesting than it actually
It does. I was like, this all happened for real?
It actually does, yeah.
This is really
Yeah.
what was going on?
I'm like, wow, this is an episode you'd want to watch, wouldn't you?
More than once, maybe.
Did Matt go all out on that?
You had to hype it up
More than
somehow.
once.
Yeah, it's a shame it doesn't live up to the synopsis.
No, but we got a new cafe, guys, and that's what's important.
Yeah. All of that stuff does happen. It's just in practice, it's not nearly as entertaining as it ought to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Series 5 opens with a recap of how the Morats gained the upper hand on the Technos, with Mega's crucial help in both adapting Ram's headset to show fake reality and rendering their zappers completely useless. The Morats now have to face the important question of how to handle the Techno transition. Not only are their kids still hooked on the technology, but they also need to uncover the fates of their missing loved ones. And, in the background of all of this, are mysterious sightings of Zoot, with hints that Mega and Java are somehow involved and to set up the next phase of their plan. So yeah, panel, it's the start of a brand new series, and we have a lot to contend with, including the fallout of the Techno regime, the return of Zoot, and the rise of Mega. So, first question, though presented in brief segments throughout the episode, what do you make of the Morats finally having a frank conversation about what to do now that they have toppled the Technos?
At last, it's taken us this long, an entire series, to get to this point where they start having conversations. And it still feels that they're not having the right ones.
But at least they're having conversations about it, unlike exactly. what they did with the Chosen.
Yeah, so true.
It is progress, but you have to wonder, as you watch this episode, why none of this was discussed before the takedown.
Yeah, this giant in-depth plan, and you got, yeah.
And that's even crazy. The plan wasn't that in-depth, because...
No, but it's still...
When we get our exposition, which one of the things I love about the exposition is the different... This is... It's all you need to know about Season 5. It doesn't care about the details. It's not taking itself seriously. So all Season 4's faults, and it had many, it was at least still taking itself seriously. From the premiere of Season 4, it wants, these are dire straight, you know, the stakes are high, right? But Season 5 starts so, like, we don't give a crap anymore, and that exposition dump of saying what happened, and it doesn't even make sense that Patch has to ask these questions, because that implies the Mallrats went yeah. into battle not even really knowing what the plan was. You guys risked yeah. your life. With the only thing you knew was that Mega was supposed to disable the Technos. That's the only thing you knew. You had no idea what he was going to do with Ram, how he was going to go about it. And you put your lives on the line on that hope and a prayer of a plan. And now the plan has to be explained to you after you managed to succeed. Like, everything about this just says, do not take this one seriously, because we don't care about the details. It sets you up from the start. So if you're disappointed, it's kind of your own fault.
Okay, fine.
I mean, can we really be surprised that they were taken in so easily by Mega?
No, I'm just saying, like, the tone, everything, you're like, no, these guys never discussed what was going to happen in the aftermath, and no, they're not even on the same page. It's like, you should know that before you're mm-hmm. going into this battle. I mean, granted, I am glad that they're at least having the discussion now, but it's like, now you're hitting conflict because nobody wants to do the same thing. And it's like, you didn't discuss how this was going to be handled at all. You're just randomly imprisoning Technos, but not all of them, you know, and nobody's taking this seriously. Nobody is taking this seriously.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this is a very vibe-based season. We're going on vibe.
We're just playing it by ear, okay?
Yeah.
We'll see how we feel after this is done and then make a decision.
That's the Mallrat way, isn't it?
It's that seriousness you mentioned. They really aren't taking this situation seriously. Like, you've just toppled this massive regime, this massive invading tribe, and no one is being serious about it.
It's like, even the emotions at the hotel, okay, it worked. You were, like, think about where they were at the end of Season 4. These guys were scared. They were nervous. They were like, we could yeah. die tomorrow because yeah, we're putting exactly. our trust in one of the Technos. And we're doing it on Jay's word, you know? But we have to have faith. So there was a sense of, like, there are stakes. And then there's the beautiful fake out at night's Twilight Breaking Dawn, you know, like, fake out. We yeah. get
of a battle that never happened. And it's like, it worked. You got in there, the technos tried to attack you, and they couldn't. And you were able, they don't even have exhilaration at having survived. They're just kind of like, oh, that all worked out. Anyway, let's have the most casual conversation about this. Like, I just want some emotion, but no, the first episode of the season says, don't take anything we do seriously, because we're not.
So, except they for definitely, the cafe. Yeah, they, that's what I was just going to say. They showed way more excitement about their new cafe than anything else in this episode.
The cafe was the biggest priority in
that
this
was
episode.
The main mm-hmm. character for sure.
You're not wrong. That's crazy.
They're like, dude, you have characters who are bringing up valid concerns. We have people that we've lost sight of, and we shouldn't have, because there wasn't even a fight. There was no chaos. Where did these people disappear
to? Where did they go?
Where did they just wander off to? And considering our past, we should take this seriously. And they're literally being told, look, we've got more important things on the agenda. And apparently it was the cafe.
Oh my God.
Well, to be fair, they have lost a lot of studio space. Probably they cannibalized it for liberty. So they have to say, where are we now going to have our gatherings? In this brand new cafe.
There is more dialogue about that cafe.
The cafe! I'm telling you, I remember the spaghetti Trudy was putting in that jar more than I remember anything else in the
cafe. Amber spends all day working on the cafe.
Yes, that is her number one priority.
Not her child.
It wasn't immediately getting to the computers, demanding where her baby daddy is.
Right!
And nothing. When she's told that other people are... just, we don't know where they are. We can't
we
account
for them. We
don't know
where they are. They're just gone.
She just gives a shrug like, wow, I guess we should have a head down. Anyway, I gotta get these. This place, it needs to be ordered because...
these mugs need to go right here, specifically.
She's literally there from the end of the battle until people are going to bed. Amber's in
She's
the cafe.
Nesting. She's nesting now. It just came late.
It doesn't make... it like, she's got the priorities. What happens to where okay. do they put all those technos? Because they say we're going to put them in a space, and Java is not with them. But shouldn't they be interested in that? I don't know.
I know, she's just like, you guys can handle this. The cafe. I've got to make sure our meeting spaces is secure.
Her brain.
Everything else is being handled.
Her brain was completely rewired and messed with.
Mm-hmm.
Anything she does is brain damage at this point.
It blows my mind. No, hey, we use this excuse for Bray.
You can't tell me I'm wrong.
No, she's not wrong, you guys. If Bray was allowed to have brain damage after Eagle Mountain, Amber is totally owed some brain damage.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It also explains what's coming.
I just can't get over that. I'm not, you guys know I love Amber, so I don't want to trash her. It's just bad writing.
Oh.
It just doesn't make sense to me that Amber, of all people, would be perfectly comfortable letting Mega and the others just handle the mop up and not be there to make sure that way things are, the logistics. Like, she literally just leaves the battle. I get it. She goes home and checks on her son. She wants to hug him, validation of life, all that. But she doesn't bother at all making sure that this is all being handled properly, correctly, where people are going, what's happening, you know. And it's, again, she didn't super trust Mega. So it doesn't make sense that our key players aren't still at the hotel making sure this runs smoothly.
I'm just still annoyed that she even, you know, instantly has Bray Jr. there. You didn't know how this whole thing would play out. Why on earth did you bring your child there?
Yeah, no, it does. Did the Mallrats literally just not know that there was going to be this giant fake out? Did they, is that confirmed that they did not know that there was going to be this big fake fight?
It's completely confirmed that the only thing they knew is that they were going to attack the technos and that Mega was going to make sure that the technos couldn't attack back. That is apparently all they knew, because that is why Mega has to explain to them what actually happened. Mm-hmm. These guys went into battle without even knowing what was going to be done to Ram or how the technos were going to be disabled or anything.
So it was the brain damage, for sure.
So it all had to be explained afterward. And that is why Patch and D left, because they heard that and said, you know what?
We can't trust you.
we can't trust any of this. Why don't we just, our friends at the moment are in a good space. We're no longer responsible. Just get out of here before this blows up in everyone's face.
Yeah. I don't blame them. That tracks.
Which was the right thing to do, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure.
But yeah, this is just an unserious premiere. And probably the worst in the show's history.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I really, like, the only part that I got genuinely excited for was the last scene where he pulls into Liberty. That was it.
Yeah.
But that being said, I'm so giddy to be in season 5. I was just like, okay, let the ride go. Let's go.
Going back to what you were saying then, Liz, with this being a terrible season premiere, I honestly, if this had been season 2, this would have been a very short podcast.
I mean, it's not like you can't make up for it, but, you know, like, you can still have a good show, even if the opening wasn't very strong. But I just feel for season 5, they just wanted you to know from the start, we aren't going to take this seriously, so you shouldn't either. Just enjoy this last summer at camp with your friends.
Yeah.
They went full camp. That's what it was. They went full camp with this season. Yeah.
They're going to do whatever, everything, all of the things can happen.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the stakes don't matter. And
nothing as well.
Yeah, there's no stakes in it. You know, like, it does not, it's okay. Don't worry. The roll of the dice is what's happening.
And yeah, we touched on it briefly, but we have to talk about that trust in Mega, because with how skillful Mega has already shown himself to be, don't you think that, like, everyone, not just Amber, should have been more on guard concerning him?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, where did that come from? Where did this sudden trust come from? And where did this sudden trust in Jay come from?
He saved Brady, that's all it took.
That's it. Because he's the only person ever, and it's true. I mean, he is the only person ever.
Is it simply because our trust in Jay is that strong?
I don't know. That's what I don't understand.
See, I don't think it's just Jay. Because remember, in the end of season 4, even though they trusted Jay, they were still very wary of Mega. It wasn't until he went into the mall with the baby that they were like, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, we can trust this guy. You know what I mean? And that was it. And it's like, okay, but it's like, we have had other characters try to redeem themselves by doing something right after having done stuff that was wrong. Mm-hmm. And our characters were wisely wary of them. They may have been like, I have to work with this person. They are trying, but they were wary of them. But the total acceptance of Mega is like, are you guys kidding me? You don't know the guy.
They're wary with
all
Lex.
You know is that he wanted to take down Ram. You don't know what his motivations for that are.
Enemy of my enemy? I don't know.
Come on, guys. You have had to work with people.
Desperation.
Who wanted the same thing as you for a minute. And then immediately stabbed you in the back once, because they just used you to achieve their goal. You know this. So they should still be like, okay, that's awesome that he helped us, but we should keep an eye on him.
Yeah. No, I think it was said correctly with the Brady thing. They just went, okay, this guy's capable of being a decent person.
He did. We never could.
So at least he will save Brady when we don't. That's good.
Yeah,
what's funny about that is both times that Brady has, three times Brady has been found or returned to her mother, it was never one of the good guys who did it. Think about it. First time Brady was taken. No, just hear me out. Okay. First time Brady's taken by the Chosen, it's Ebony who reunites mother and daughter. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Definitely not one of the good guys.
No.
Second time, it's Luke. It's Luke who helps her get away. Not one of the good guys. And it's just like, this time it's Mega. And it's like, it just makes me laugh that our heroes never reunite Brady with her mother.
Well, never. I just want to stick a fork in your spoke there, though, because it's Tyson that finds Brady and takes her to Mega, who brings her back to the mall.
But they don't.
But
know
is Tyson right, a good guy at this point? Do we know?
No, she is. I don't think Tyson's ever been a good guy. But that's
no.
The way Tyson is written in her brief stint in season 4 leaves a lot of ambiguity in the air.
Well,
You know I love her and all that jazz, but I'm just saying we don't.
No,
she did that.
I don't think you can say that though, because she's not on screen enough to say whether she's good or bad or not.
That's why I said ambiguous.
But she's never in the interest of the mall rat the times that we see her.
Yeah, I'm saying I think it's funny that it's rarely ever our core cast of heroes that save this baby.
They have more important things to do, like fix the new cafe.
I mean, they don't like searching for anyone, period.
That's what this whole episode was just excuses to not
and search listen, for her. Trudy! Trudy's the one that went out and searched for Amber!
So true.
But nobody comes for her!
Yeah, but Trudy knows what it's like to have no one searching for you or your child. I know, but nobody comes to help
for Trudy. Poor Trudy. Well,
that's why she helps.
This whole tribe is messed up. What is wrong with these people? What are we doing?
Like, from Trudy's point of view, trusting Mega is completely sane. Because this is, for once, someone who brings her baby back to her.
Trudy's just along for the ride at this point.
Was I concerned about these missing mall rats? I ain't gonna lie, you guys. When I first watched it, I didn't care.
Thank you.
They had gone missing. At this point, I was just like, I didn't. Sorry. It wasn't because I didn't like the characters.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I like Selena, I like Dee and Patch. It had nothing to do with not liking them. I wasn't surprised. Like, when I heard Tysan, I was like, okay, that's what it was. It was just a trick to keep us watching. I wasn't surprised about her. I was just kind of like, oh, right. Okay. There's got to be people who leave with every season premiere, people who don't come back, and you need an excuse. So the minute I heard that they didn't know where Celine was and Dee and Patch were missing, I was like, oh, so they're not coming back? Okay, I got you.
Right? I was hoping with Celine. I was really hoping.
Didn't care at this point. I'm like, we still haven't solved the missing from season 4. So you're going to give me more people missing to care about? I don't care.
True.
I mean, I was disappointed that Tysan wasn't coming back. So I'm like, oh, so you got me geared up. You got me geeked out to see what was going to happen between him, Lex, and, you know, Siva, and then pulled the rug, you know? And I was like, that's my bad for believing in you by this point, you know? But otherwise, I was just like, okay, so they're not coming back for the show. All right. And you'll give us some lame reason as to why they're... I was actually surprised to see Celine again in the episode to see what had happened. I was like, oh, okay, so you haven't completely disappeared. All right. But was I worried about their safety? At this point, no.
I have to say, though, I really disliked how they dragged it out and they kept saying, oh, she's missing and you were meant to be. Yeah, that was annoying. Yeah. It was annoying. Because it's like, we knew already that it wasn't, and like, it was just messing with Lex at that point.
That's a badly written scene. When we get to it, I will have more to say. But yeah, badly written scene.
It's interesting, though, to think about what would Dee, Patch, and Tysan have been like in season 5. That's fun to try and think about.
Well, they probably would have ruined Dee and Patch.
Definitely.
They had just gotten together, so they probably would have spent all of season 5 looking for excuses for them to have strife in their relationship, you know, because they wouldn't know what to do with them and just let them be happy. You know, Patch probably would have been put on the back burner because they're bringing Jack back. I'm glad they went when they did, because they left on a note where it's like, you have fond memories of them. You wish you could have seen more, but honestly, with this show, that's the best way to go. People wishing they'd seen you more, because otherwise...
Had they stayed, they would have either made a love triangle with Dee, Patch, and Ellie, or, you know, Jack, Patch, and Dee.
We would have just had two, like, 4 characters that were, you know, the same. We would have had just 2 pairs of the same characters. Like...
No, I agree. It's better that they weren't there.
Yeah. A better send-off would have been, instead of... I don't like the just disappearing between seasons or disappearing between episodes. That's annoying, because the characters deserved more than that.
It's a shame that we have to say at least they got a note in the next episode. We don't get that for some of our veteran characters.
That's true. We got the closure. Yeah, you're right. You're right. We did get closure with that. So
that's like, oh, I know it's such a minor thing, but at least we get that. Because like the Tai San situation, like that was, that hit me. I was so excited to have Tai San back. You introduced her with this really tantalizing storyline. She was a techno. She was reprogrammed. She was this and that with Mega.
She looks just gone. Like Lex's current girlfriend.
Yeah.
Just vanishes again. Like, how can you do that? Like, oh.
Yeah, I think Dee and Patch are one of the few characters, along with like Mouse, but there are very few characters that we know like why they left and that it was for good reasons, you know, and like they're like, I mean, because for all we know, Sasha, you know, was just spreading the virus everywhere he went as a carrier, you know, and you know what I mean? Like you can imagine a sticky end for Sasha, but like there are very few characters who leave and we do get closure unless they die. You know,
unless they die, yeah.
Unless you're you're forced to think of the most horrific things being done to them because they were taken in during an invasion. Most of our, a bunch of our characters were taken in season 4, and it's like the answers we get for them is a few of them died, or they're not dead, but again, it still hasn't been good for them. Like, it's like what we know of what the Technos do to the Taken. Nothing good happened to the people who were taken, you know? Even Tai San coming back doesn't make you, your stomach feel good. Cause it's like, so if they're, well, don't they kill you her. And they don't torture you, they'll brainwash you. Yeah. It's just like, there's no happy ending for many of the characters who disappear, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, at least, you know, those two had a happy ending.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, good on you, because you can't have one in this city or in this mall. Get the frick out of here.
Go away.
All right. Yeah, let's move on, because we have to talk about Zoot.
Oh, boy.
Zoot's back.
Power and chaos.
Ebony's visions of Zoot are becoming stronger, but she's not the only one, as Zoot begins to appear to people throughout the city. After being spooked by a power cut, Ebony confesses to Trudy that she has seen him, imploring Trudy to escape with Brady while she can. So yeah, there was so much speculation back on the forums back in the day how Zoot could have returned. do you think, I know this is not shown completely yet, but do you think the mystery of Zoot should have been kept for as long as possible?
Yeah, he's a bit like Bruce the shark in Jaws. The less we see of him, the better.
Yeah.
I'm going to be straight. As soon as I saw, like, okay, when Ebony was seeing Zoot, I was like, okay, there's a psychological reason she could be seeing him, you know? And I was intrigued in season 4 as to why is Ebony seeing Zoot?
Yeah.
And especially I thought season 4 filmed it well. Like, it just, like, had a dreamlike quality and eeriness. And it was a little unreal. And I was interested then. But this episode where city kids see him, the opening scene shows a bunch of city kids seeing Zoot, I was immediately uninterested, because at that point I thought, no, this is going to be a big bag of BS as to why other people are seeing Zoot, and I don't care. I immediately was like, it's the freaking helmets, okay? It's something to do with this technology, and I'm like, why would the Technos bring back Zoot? And I was annoyed that this was going to be the big villain in some way for our season.
Again,
and it felt tired. It felt like we'd done this before. Mm-hmm. Zoot psychologically haunting Ebony, interesting. Zoot,
perfect, yeah.
Sending the city into chaos again after we've already done this, I don't care. That was how I felt.
I agree.
Yeah.
I love Zoot, you know, but I completely agree with that. I'm like, are we really going to do this storyline again?
Mm.
Like, when does Zoot go away? When do we start something new?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, the legend of Zoot was built up by Jaffa, because we met weirder and crazier people than Zoot in season 1. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved to see the ghost of Top Hat terrorizing.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say Top Hat for sure. Yeah.
You know, the guy who would set you on fire because he was bored. Not
he was bored. Yeah.
Not some angsty kid with brother issues and a girl who didn't like him enough. I know too much about Zoot to see him as a threat. I'm sorry. there had to be bigger, badder kids in the city that you could have used. And I'm like, this is tired. We've done this. And I thought it was done more interestingly with the Chosen turning him into a god and creating a religion mm-hmm. around him. And I liked the theming around what that means and how Zoot himself would have felt about being used this way. But this time, there's no personal attachment to the people who were using his iconography, you know? And it just, I stopped being interested in the Zoot plotline immediately.
Yeah, I have to say, I've got to agree with that. Because I think the most interesting thing about Zoot is that he dies so early into season one. And they undercut that every time. They build him up as the big bad. He's this anti-hero, you know, the whole city's terrified of him. And then he plunges off a balcony to his doom. And that is the strength of the character, because you don't, it's like Ned Stark, you don't expect
it to happen. We didn't get to see the build. Yeah. We didn't get to see him become, you know, go from Martin. We got to see that little, you know, the little flashback of him becoming Zoot. But we didn't get the build up of him ruling the city and running the city.
Yeah.
You know, we got, what, a few episodes? Before he was gone, where we got to actively see him and the Locos terrorizing everything. If they would have given us more time with him.
Well, I think thought it was kind of like the strength that they didn't give us more time, because it's so surprising when they do go ahead and kill him off.
It's not just that. What makes Zoot fascinating is that he wasn't ever going to take over the city. He was a wounded thug of a kid, okay? Yep. And he never had it in him to take over the city. He's just a little boy who went the wrong way and tragically died before we got to learn anything about him. And the craziest thing about Zoot is that we still don't know who he was. We don't know who Martin was, because we only ever see him through the eyes of other people.
Yes.
Everybody else. That's how we learn about who Martin was. Secondhand retellings from people who knew him. That's what makes him interesting.
People who thought they knew him.
Right. Bray saw his sweet little brother who had problems with him, and he wished they had been closer. You know what I mean? Ebony saw a guy with a vision who tortured her and is now her nightmare. Trudy, he was just a boy who had a crush on her that she really wasn't into, and
she thought he was kind of pathetic.
Right, you know, and then he went crazy, and so she had these dueling, you know, feelings for him. She didn't want to be with him, but she felt bad for him, you know, on and on. And we have no idea who Martin was or how Martin truly saw himself. That's what makes him interesting. And then somebody taking him and turning him to a god and using that god to torment his family. I'm sure Martin would have loved that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's what made him interesting. But it's been done. Stop. Let the guy die. Let him rest, okay?
Yes, let him rest. Let him rest.
He's like 14 or 15 years old. It's a tragedy. Let him go, okay? But
He's a child.
Yeah, it's that last bit. I don't understand. We just had the whole Chosen bit with Zoot. Like that was it. We did not need this again. Like, why bring it back now?
Yeah.
I remember just being so utterly confused, because season 4 airing here was a bit spotty. So I missed part of season 4 when I saw this episode back then. And all my brain did was just, okay, but wait, why is he back? How is he back? Because I missed the whole paradise technology part. So my mind originally went 20,000 different places with how on earth is he alive and what happened with that? Because it didn't make sense.
You know what would have been better than Zoot?
The Guardian.
What?
AI versions of the adults. That would have put chaos into the city. That would have made everyone go,
oh, that would have been awesome.
Wow. You know what I mean? That should have been done.
Have CityNet go crazy and just, all over the computers and stuff, but it's, you know, the adults. And, that would have been
Do you know how much craziness that would have...
That would have been fantastic. Because remember, season 1 gave us a taste of how these kids who've gone feral would respond to the adults returning. You'd have kids like Patsy who were desperate for an adult, and you'd have other kids who'd be stoning them to death. You know what I mean? Like, that would be fascinating to explore. Like, what do you do?
That's too much thought.
I mean, it also picks up that thread from the original invasion in season 4, when they actually thought it was the adults returning.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. And you saw how many kids wanted to see them.
Yep. Even Maz went.
You know, Chloe's having existential crisis of what this means now that the adults are back,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how much her life is going to change. And that's good. Or is it good? You know, like there was a lot of thought going. Can you imagine if Mega had decided to create like a fake entity adult, you know, as the new voice of authority the in the city, you know, to create his chaos? Like, that would have worked just as well as a fake zoo. Because the city still would be split. You'd have kids who would want to follow this new authority, and you'd have kids who'd be fighting it, because it's like, it's too late now.
We've been doing this on our own for years.
Right. My brain is broken. You can't make me go back, you know? And he still could have played out his plan. It would have been cool.
Do you know who would have been fun for that? Ebony's dad. Because then they could have still messed with Ebony's mind. And Java would be. Java, you know, all for it.
That's where the storyline, the natural conclusion of it would be an all father character that turns out not to be real, like in the movie Equilibrium, you know, and the whole society follows this person, and it turns out they don't even exist.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a trope in Fallout that's like that. So I mean. And it could have been done, and with the technos, it that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or even like, if when they came in, they invaded originally. They just originally invaded instead of like showing their hand right away. They could have done something like that, because obviously kids see plain, they're going to think adults. You know, I just don't like the technos. I'm sorry.
I think it's something that would have definitely made them stand out more. Mm-hmm. Creating their own, you know, and it definitely, I mean, because Mega and Ram are different in their villainy and their main plan and what they're trying to accomplish and how they go about it. So yeah, this just feels more in Mega's wheelhouse, especially since his whole goal is to create a state of order. Even if it's a small state, that's why he creates chaos, so that people will run to his state of order. You know, and it makes sense that he would use a virtual adult or adults to create that chaos and a state of order. It would make more sense than him picking a chaotic character person in their world.
It doesn't seem very Mega.
When, you know, where it's like, you don't know which way the cat's going to jump if you use this guy.
Yeah, like, were you here for this? Do you really know?
Not to mention, there's too many people who knew him personally who are going to suss out that something's not right about him and it's not really him or whatever. You know, I get it. He needed Ebony, but as you guys said, he could have used someone that maybe Ebony used, or just someone that would have affected her. I don't know, but I'm just saying, like, using Zoot again felt like you're out of ideas, aren't you?
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly it. Like, well, we're circling back around now since we're ending. They don't think they knew that they were over yet, did they?
No, they were still hoping.
They wrote the season 6 script, right? Or at least some of it.
Yeah.
They held on to the hope they were going to get a season 6.
Okay, so that's what I thought.
This was not the end.
But then they should have done better. What the heck? You would think Maggie, that they were trying to get more.
Maggie, it's like you said, they were throwing spaghetti at the wall. They were just like, whatever sticks, whatever gets the rating.
Clearly.
Yep.
they were simply thinking, okay, this Zoot thing, that worked, that got decent ratings,
people like him,
let's try that again.
No, I am tired. Listen, I love Zoot, but I am over it. Move on.
It just feels like that, you know, with, okay, these technos didn't work. When did we still have viewers? Oh, when we were talking about Zoot.
Especially when it's not like we're gonna learn anything more about Zoot. It's not even and there's no exploration of the themes of Zoot and like what he put, you know, because they don't actually take the time to, like, we watch Ebony go mad and it's good reason why she would, but this is the time to, if you're gonna bring Zoot back and it's gonna be her main storyline, explore the trauma he put her through, that he was enough to break her. You know, him coming back would break her, you know, but they don't explore that. They do with Trudy, but her trauma is more the Chosen, not so much Zoot himself, but what the Chosen used him for and what that did to her. But it's just like, we don't learn anything new about him, and it's a recycled storyline. And I'm like, there are plenty of ways to traumatize these kids. You have endless possibilities. and you just brought back an old pony trick because you've run out of ideas and you're jingling everything. Everything is going into the barbecue.
There was something that struck me as odd, though.
One thing? Just one thing?
Other than, you know, Zoot being... Zoot. No, but other than the whole Zoot was magically back and then he wasn't. It's the fact that Ebony would tell Trudy to grab her child and run.
I don't know, like, man. Ebony is in a place.
Yeah,
she is in a place. If she genuinely believes that Zoot is back, she may. She may be like, you gotta go. Like, this is it. Like, I'm done. We're done. It's done. We're cooked. Let's go, you know?
What I liked about that scene is it was a mirror of one of the only honest scenes these two ever had, and that was back in the cave. Now, Ebony is very rarely vulnerable. She very rarely ever lets her true feelings show. And remember, back in the cave, when Trudy's demanding answers, and these two are slinging back and forth their versions of the truth and all that, and their hurts and everything, Ebony finally just breaks and says, you know, I went after Bray because I wanted him. I was a girl with a crush, and you were in the way. And Trudy gets her answer. It's not a satisfying answer, but it's the truth. She wanted the same boy you did. There was nothing personal about it. I just needed you out of the way so I could have that boy. And Trudy's like, wow, okay, so you destroyed my life because you wanted the same boy I wanted. Wow. You know what I mean? Like, and there was that honest moment between them. We were just two little girls who had a crush on the same boy. That's all this was all about. That's all it ever was about, you know?
And that's this why you're doing this to me.
Right. Yeah. You know, and this moment is a mirror of a brief moment of honest sincerity between these two, where Ebony is transported to just being a kid who is scared out of her mind. And if anyone would understand the fear that Zoot could engender, maybe Trudy would. And it happens to Trudy,
for sure.
Who comes into her room, and in a moment of vulnerability and complete openness, she tells her, get your kid the frick out of here, because he's back.
Yep.
And you remember what happened last time.
Yep.
He was here, you know what I mean? And, expecting Trudy to understand, because Ebony is too haunted by Zoot for very different reasons. And Trudy, I just thought that was a really great moment between the two girls. The acting was really great, you know, and it's you can see, like, the disappointment and the confusion and the fear in Ebony's face when Trudy's like, I don't see anything. You must just be tired. And Ebony's like, if you don't believe me that he's, no one's ever going to. There's no one I can actually express this to who's going to believe or understand the fear I'm feeling if you can't see him. It's just a good moment, I thought, between them.
I agree.
Because it's like, Ebony is looking at Trudy as, you're also a victim of the same person who abused me.
Exactly. Yes.
You have to understand.
You can feel this. Yes.
And if she can't, then who does Ebony have to talk to about this? Nobody. Mm-hmm. No one will understand.
Nope.
Which is very interesting, seeing as her sister is living in that same mall.
But nope, they aren't like that.
Yeah, but they didn't go through the same thing with him. Remember, the whole they were
totally
part of the Locos
relationship
was pulled
yep.
out of someone's butt back end, and they didn't
just
even explore
to justify them being there. Yeah.
So it's like it's just so easy to be like, oh, Steve and Java just were not psychologically tortured by Zoot.
Makes sense. You know what I mean? They weren't his lover.
Yeah, they wouldn't understand what Ebony went through. They could have expanded on it. They could have expanded to the point where Ebony had to get rid of her sisters because it was something Zoot made her do. Anything.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't. It was just there to explain the sisters and their apparent hatred for their sister. And then it was dropped. It didn't freaking matter. It was just to justify them wanting to kill her.
Yeah.
Let's head over to what will quickly become one of the highlights of season 5. Liberty. Head into the garbage dump to retrieve him. Mega finds that Ram has disappeared, carried off by a mysterious biker to a town called Liberty. So we have to start with the obvious question. Was it wise to simply dump Ram on top of a garbage heap?
No, it wasn't. It was the worst mistake that they have made.
Listen, I think that they genuinely thought this guy is going to rot to death in this dump. Like,
so cruel.
I mean, like, that's the only logical explanation is that they were like, nope, he's going to die here. He's not making it out of this dump. Certainly no one's going to come to this dump, you know? Like, I mean, they were using their. I'm sidetracked. I can't. I don't know.
I love you guys. I love Mega so much. Okay.
Yeah.
And it bothers me that this is like the dumbest decision he made.
His
grand plan. He should have put him into cryo, whatever you want to call it, and left him there. That's what he should have done.
And make him think this.
And make him think he's in the dump.
You guys have to remember everybody believes that Ram is dying. They all nobody knows
that that's what I'm saying.
Like nobody knows a magic penis is going to come and heal him. Okay,
right, so and it's crazy.
They all believe he's going to die.
Yes,
he's on
so
death
they think
door.
Putting him in this garbage dump is going to do him off. It's going
to. But
be
I
him.
Just don't understand why Mega would think to do something that elaborate and with too many chances
power.
To fail.
I can't deal with that.
It's like I don't understand. It would have been much more simple to just lock him in a room,
exactly, and let him die. That, I mean,
and let him die.
Yeah, but even if you really want him on that dump, why not put some guards there?
Cameras watching.
Can't watch this guy, dude.
That feels like something Mega would do. You're spying on the mall rats, but you're not gonna watch. Like this is a James Bond villain move. Okay, I'm gonna leave you with the sharks with the freaking laser beams on their head, but I'm not gonna watch them take you out. I'm just gonna assume that the sharks and the laser beams will kill you and walk away, like right when my plan's about to wrap up. It's the dumbest thing they have Mega do. It doesn't feel in character for him.
It's not in character at
He's
all.
Too He's methodical for that. This.
Exactly, yes.
Can I make an observation? What happened to the chair? Because that is completely rusty. The last time you it was fine. And it's like oxidized since it's been on the dump.
It's all that drool.
It's not in a sterile environment anymore. And it also... listen, the wheelchair is part of him. They have become one. So...
It's a visual representation of his.
Oh, yes! Like, this my is, word. He has been there for 2 whole hours. I don't understand.
The chair was a metaphor all along, guys. Yes.
All along. It is, you know, his painting, okay? Like, it's...
Oh, wow.
No, I was like, that just was too, he was leaving up too much to chance, and that didn't feel like Mega.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can buy him, because again, I don't mind if my genius character, someone gets the better of them sometimes. The battle of wills between Mega and Ram can be fun. And so, for example, when the whole password thing, and Mega's like, crap, I can't believe that slipped past me. Yeah. I can buy that. That's fine. That's a reasonable thing that he didn't expect or didn't prepare for properly or thought he had safeguards against, and he didn't because Ram had one up on him. But the leaving him in a garbage tip as the way to dispose of him and not keeping an eye to make sure that he stays disposed, and apparently this is a well-frequented garbage tip.
I don't understand. How far away from Liberty is this garbage dump? Because, like... What the heck?
I'm like, you could have easily just locked him in a cellar somewhere. I get it. You don't want any of the technos to retrieve him. And it's like, you guys had a secret lab on the outskirts of the city where you were torturing kids. All right? There's so many places you can hide Ram where none of the other technos would find him. And he would presumably die. And you could still have, Slade find him by chance. Because
they could have let him in the woods somewhere, and probably he wouldn't have been found.
Yeah.
Okay, just randomly somewhere in the trees. I don't know, toss him in a creek or something. Like, anything.
It's, the only way I can explain this is that Jay said, I'll take care of it.
But he didn't. He's the one who did it.
Because he was the one that went out there to, you know, get the password. Like, and first of all, the wheelchair had power still. Mm. And tell me, am I imagining this? Okay, but it's probably bad editing, right? But like at the end of season 4, when he's trying to move the wheelchair, he's in a puddle of mud, right? Like there's a puddle of mud that he can't get traction in to move. But then in season 5, we see him up on top of the garbage.
His DS of so trash.
Like, he clearly is able to move, right?
No, this is all methodical on Mega's part. Mega took the time to wheel him out a couple hours out of the city.
Yeah.
Found this trash heap. He had probably surveyed. So this is perfect. Nobody comes out here. And if anybody does, no one in their right mind would help him. He'll be dead in 3 days of dehydration. Here's, oh, and he's like mud. This is perfect. He can't
perfect,
run away.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He can't roll away.
And he won't touch the mud. He's not going to climb down into it because it's mud, right? Like,
mm-hmm. And they assume he can't walk.
And you know, okay, so the he's a germaphobe. So clearly, the garbage heap is because he hates germs so much. So Mega was like, haha, this serves you right. You're going to live in a garbage heap until you die because...
Yeah, or until we come back for you.
That's not Mega. That's why it's so out of place. Like,
I know it's not.
Okay, I will say this. Mega does have a petty side.
He does, but I mean, like, to that...
But he does have a petty side.
He wouldn't have left him unattended, though.
Every time he smirks when someone comes searching for someone they love,
that little
and he's like,
smirk.
I have no idea what happened to your brother, Jay, or Tyson, or anybody. And then as soon as he's gone, he smirks to himself. He does have a petty side.
He knows everything. He knows everything. And he gets off on knowing things. That's knowledge is his thing.
Yeah, dumping around. The garbage heap because you're afraid of germs and you're gonna die.
How much of this though do the mole rats actually know about?
None. Apparently they knew nothing,
which is ridiculous. That's a whole other disastrous conversation.
No, nothing. That's exactly it. Yeah,
because they look alike. You have that thing with Amber and Pride where he's like, oh, we've taken all the toys away and he won't be able to hurt anyone. And it's like, so where do you think he is?
Yeah,
and where
exactly.
What do you guys think is going on here? Because he's still got the one toy.
None of this was discussed. And they feel like these are reasonable explanations that they don't have to worry about him anymore. Because
for a man,
like,
they don't know.
They literally ask him, so where is Ram? And Meg is just like, oh, you don't have to worry about him anymore. And they accept that
cool.
as the answer.
Two thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I'm telling you, this season opener is telling you we don't care about details and neither should you. They don't matter. The details don't matter. Just enjoy the ride, guys. We got some fun stuff planned for you.
That leads us on to the next question. Like, what do you make of the actual decision to keep Ram within the show and the story? Like, is this because they just don't know what to do with the characters once they're finished?
Or is it because they're losing so many other characters and they're like, well, if he wants to stay, he can stay.
I also think they like the actor. I think they like the character.
Yeah,
and
that's what I mean. Like, they like Tom was there,
but they never know to say goodbye though. With any of the characters,
their timing on saying goodbye to characters is always bad.
Who do you think they should say? Should have who are we talking about here?
Oh, so many. Pride, Dow, like
every character that has left us, either left too soon or far too late.
Mm-hmm.
They
right,
never
like Danny.
Leave when too they late. Should have left.
When they should, yeah,
mm-hmm. Like they don't. I they're like Fox. They don't know when to keep a series on or cancel it. And I feel like it's almost like as long as the kids want to stick around and put up with this, they were going to keep them. And I do feel that they were like, hey, Ram's fun and there's other stuff. So as long as Tom wants to stay on the show, we'll find something to do with him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
For sure.
So I was like, oh my god, we're gonna have another Guardian situation where he's gonna keep him in the background there because you just don't want to get rid of him, you don't want to write him off. Like, I mean,
it's like I miss when the kids were willing to make such decisive decisions back in season one about threats. You know, like somebody broke into their mall, Ebony breaks into their mall, and these kids had a serious discussion about ending her life because she was a threat to theirs.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And this season one, mall rats go, okay,
right, they were like,
are
dude,
not the same people.
Our lives are in danger. If she could destroy us if we let her go, what do we do about this? You know what I mean? And like, that's the last time these kids were genuine about actually keeping themselves alive.
About self-preservation.
Yeah, back then we had characters who taught. We had characters who were able to think about such things instead of just worrying about a cafe.
But yeah, this was, it's, I was like, oh, okay, so we're not taking this seriously. All right.
No.
I got you. I heard the message loud and clear. All right. Oh my goodness. But yeah, I think that's the dumbest thing they had Megan do. And it, I don't mind Megan doing dumb things because he's human, but this was out of character.
Yeah,
this is the kind of dumbness that him forgetting that Ram might have a backdoor password, that's acceptable.
Yeah.
Leaving him on a garbage tip and just not keeping eyes on him and just thinking, okay, you know, that's done.
See ya.
You know, that's handled. Yeah. And being surprised when he goes back and he's not there. Like, dude, no, that's a dumb, that's not in character for you.
I mean, it just because cascades, because it makes everyone look bad. It makes Mega look bad. It makes the Mallrats look bad. It makes, like, it's just, I mean,
Mallrats
make good.
The Mallrats look bad.
But you know what I mean, like.
And I love it because it's not even an inside job. Like, no. Often that's what, like, when the Mallrats have these big screw ups, you know, they are doing the best they can, and they're not always making the wise decisions.
But like Lex with Tice and Trudy in The Chosen.
It's usually an inside job that they didn't see coming. It's rarely ever an outside enemy that spoils the plans. It's somebody within their own group who's betrayed them and is doing something messed up. This one, they have no one to blame but themselves. Nobody to blame but themselves for literally just not caring enough to do the bare minimum of a follow-up on this.
Of a follow-up, yes. I have
confirm
a few questions.
The kill, you guys. Confirm the
double
kill.
Tap.
Double tap. Yeah.
If you had him locked in a room, you wouldn't have
you would
to worry
where
about
he
that.
Is. Yeah,
you would know where he was, especially if there was an emergency. And that's something Mega would have done. He would be like, "I need
until
to hold
he
on to him.
Yeah,
until
he until
knew
he
I
didn't
know
need him
I don't need him."
Yep, it does seem very, very out of
because he needs him immediately. He needs him immediately.
Immediately. The first thing he tries to do.
It's literally it's not even 24 hours later and he's already at the garbage chip trying to find him. Okay. It's like, come on, Maggie, you weren't that stupid. You weren't written to be that stupid. And the rest of the Mallrats are just like,
oh, the power went out. That is fine.
Oh, goodness. Your concerns, you guys. You guys, the war is over. And you're just like, I hope we get to keep the electricity. I'm kind of liking it. You guys are really chipper, given the fact that you still have a bunch of family members you don't know are alive. And if they are, they've been tortured or sold into slavery. And you still have a journey to find them. You are all way too chipper.
It's been a long time since we had a brand new location. What did you make of the snapshot we see of Liberty, as well as the introduction of Slade and Ruby?
I love it. I'm so excited for a new location. Yep. I'm so excited for a new location, new characters, just new everything, you know?
When I say fresh air, it doesn't even describe it.
It's absolutely, like, wow. Yes.
Felt so good.
It's not just that it's a new location. It's a location that's true to what the show started as.
Yeah.
Yes.
The minute that you part. See this town, like, the set design on Liberty is probably the best I've seen since the original mall. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I believe that this little suburb exists and these kids have taken it over.
Yes.
It feels lived in. It breathes, you know? And I'm interested in knowing this place. You know, it's like, new stuff isn't bad, but it needs to be in the spirit of this world you created.
And
Kids surviving in a post-apocalyptic world.
Yes.
And Liberty has that feeling. Yep. I was like, oh, okay, finally, I feel like I'm familiar with something with the show that I freaking fell in love with.
Yes, yes. And our first look at Ruby, I just loved it.
Yeah.
She's so good.
Everything about the place is so handmade. Mm-hmm. Kids were making it their own, you know? And it's like, the minute you see Ruby's saloon, just look at the design on the doors. Mm-hmm. Kids smashed the bottom of cans to decorate it. You know, someone put a lot of thought into what the kids would have done to this place to make it theirs.
Yeah.
How they dress. It's like the first real lived-in location we've gotten since, you know, the first couple of seasons. Because even, you guys know I like the Gaians, but that first Gaian set, as pretty as it was, it didn't feel lived in. It didn't feel like a practical place they lived. and the way they used the space, you know? Yeah. And then when we mm-hmm. see the Guyans later, they're nomads. And I'm like, it looks more lived in, but it's not really the Guyans. Like, where are your camps? You're just literally camping on the road now. Like, what's up?
Yeah. And
the Liberty, they nailed it. They nailed it. Somebody got inspired.
I wonder who was in charge of sets for this season.
They had to come up with something because they'd lost them all and they knew they'd lost them all. And that's the iconic set. And it's like they had to come up with something. And I'll give them credit. They came up with something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, no, I love it. I'm so happy for Liberty.
There's a reason most of our characters end up migrating to Liberty.
Absolutely. Yeah. Uh-huh. It becomes the heart of season 5, doesn't it? It's where all the characters go. All the cool stuff happens in Liberty. And also the new characters that we've got, Slade and Ruby, feel mm-hmm. interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, on finally. Site.
On site, I'm interested in them.
Yes.
I'm not sitting there looking at their costume design. I'm not laughing. I'm not like, that looks goofy. I'm sorry. When I first saw the technos, I was like, this looks goofy. I'm not intimidated. This just looks silly. Yeah. You know, these are like 1960s Star Trek uniforms, and those were still better. Like, this is bad. They don't look good. I see Slade and Ruby. I'm interested. I want to know who they are. I want to know what their story is. I want to know where they came from.
Yeah.
Without them saying, like, Slade doesn't even say a word, and I'm already intrigued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Such a stark contrast. Like, we see Slade and Ruby in this episode, but also Stats and Wizard, who are just plain boring.
But they're, like, the first technos with any real personality, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I was like, where were you guys all season?
Nowhere yet. They were always there, okay?
They just weren't named yet, just like Diana, actors, she was always there, man.
Yes. They were always there.
And Ruby's look is so iconic.
Yes, and what she says, and then literally the facial expression, like, it just, it's so good.
She looks like, okay, so damn good. I was like, oh, that's a tribal outfit.
Yes.
We need more of these outfits, things that it's just like, it's not, it's just off skew enough from what mm-hmm. someone would actually wear, you know? And it does speak to the 2000s. I'll give it props for that.
Of course.
I love that, you know, but it just, that's what the tribe was about when it came to the costuming. You've given mm-hmm. kids the freedom to literally wear who they are as a person or how they want to be mm-hmm. seen and viewed by the world with no social norms getting in the way for the first time in their lives. And there's just something about the way Ruby's dressed that just speaks to that. Same thing with Slade. Not only does it speak to who he is, a rogue.
Oh, right? But fancy.
A rogue on the road. And
yeah.
I was just like, okay, somebody showed up to do the costume. Because I'm saying some of the Mallrat uniform clothes were getting lazy.
One of the first things I thought about with Liberty was, I can just imagine someone like Alice here.
Yeah.
Like, if any place, this is where I would have wanted Alice to end up.
I mean, I think Ruby and Alice would have a lot in common.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. I think they would have gotten along great, to be honest.
I would love to see those two girls just drinking and lamenting, having bad taste in men.
Ruby running the bar, Alice as her bouncer.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm. It's Tracy and as well.
Ah, what a team!
Uh-huh.
That could have been the spin-off.
But yeah. I would have watched
Ruby, Alice, and Steva run the saloon.
Tales from Liberty. I would definitely watch that.
Same, yeah.
And that's what I think any spin-offs of the show should have been. Instead of getting the new Tomorrow, I think we should have just... Like, what was that? Sector 4 project the fans did?
Yeah.
Like, I think that is the kind of spin-off you do. That's how you continue telling stories about the tribe without the main characters.
Yeah.
Just take stories mm-hmm. that take place in tribe world.
Yeah.
Other people who have survived and how they've gotten by and stuff like that. And how they've responded to their ever-changing chaotic world was the best way to carry the tribe forward.
Yeah, and in that way you could have turned it into even an anthology series where we follow...
It could have been, it could have been like Skins, you know?
Yeah. Oh my god, it should have been Skins.
Could you imagine?
Yes.
I honest to God, I don't know, man. Cloud Nine handling something like Skins.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, like, the formatting, you know, where Skins is only giving you about 2 years in the life of these students before they go off to college.
Yeah. And they give you a new set of characters.
And that's risky, but I'm just saying, with the tribe, if you're getting to a point where your actors are leaving, it's like, okay, what direction do you go? Like, tell another tribe story, other people surviving in this world. And Liberty was like a great example of a place people would have tuned in to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, because you could have said it even in the past, given the show. So you could have said it just after everything happens with the adults. And then you could have seen it like we did season one with the mole rat. Like, how did these people survive?
They could have had completely, because I mean, we get so many hints from the show that what happened in the city didn't happen everywhere.
Mm.
You know, there are places the virus never even made it to because it didn't have the same efficacy rate of the original strand. You know, not everybody caught it. And, you know, like there are people who are able to avoid it entirely. And not everybody got it and died, even without the antidote, you know? I mean, the virus storyline gets dropped a lot. We keep meeting new people who've never encountered it, in fact, you know? And I do appreciate that when we meet these libertarians, like, that they don't know who the Chosen or Zoot really are, because they were so off the grid, away from that. But they did encounter the Technos, and they have an opinion about that. I appreciate that, you know, because of where they are. They're off the beaten path. They never caught the Chosen's attention, you know, and we don't have to hear the same story about them feeling a certain way about Zoot and knowing who the Mallrats are and on and on and on. They had a whole different experience out there.
Yeah, it's like if there's someone there who actually encountered one of the Chosen, they would have just gone, okay, yeah, some cult worshipping some crazy dead kid. Yeah, we just let them be.
And as you get to know Liberty, you realize it definitely is more of a transient kind of community. It's not tribal in nature. People come, people go. They pass through. They stay the night. They find work. They go on their way. That's all Slade's planning on doing, you know? So that's some interesting storytelling that doesn't lock you into a cast of characters you have to stay around forever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, seeing Liberty was the first time I was excited since the end of season three.
Yeah, same.
This is funny. Okay, I was on our Facebook site, and I was looking, and I was like, oh, I wanted to make some new art because I got some storylines and some characters I'm interested in making art for. And I was like, when's the last time I made art? I realized I didn't make a single piece of art in season four.
Wow.
Nope.
That's how much that season depressed me. I was like, the last time I made art was in season three. Damn.
So uninspiring.
That says a lot. I was like, there's nothing to commemorate here.
Nope. Let's just move on past this. Forget it ever happened.
But I already got like 5 sets in my head now for season 5.
See?
Because Liberty and Mega.
I just like this season more. It's not good, and it doesn't take itself seriously, and nothing really matters, but I have fun with it.
Yeah.
Like the
because you know more. Now not to take it seriously, and you know now that nothing really matters.
Yep.
So you can just enjoy what you get.
Yeah.
And you know what will happen to Pride, and that's making it even more enjoyable.
Here we go again. I knew we were not going to get through this episode without someone.
She's never will let us die. She'll never let us forget. Guess what, guys? 3 more episodes.
I mean, I'm excited too, but like, come on. And the thing, what's messed up about it is, I'm not even excited for what actually happens. I'm excited for what it does to someone else. And that's awful. I am a horrible person.
Yeah, we love you anyway, dearest.
It's all that matters.
Taking advantage of a distraction, Wizard and Stats escape from the hotel.
But they have our weapons, and there's at least one of them back there who ain't afraid to use them.
Lex, did you see that? Even his old lady's got him on a leash. Do you know what I reckon? I think Ram's still alive. I don't think those Mallrats have the common sense to finish him off.
So what if he is? There's nothing we can do about it.
Not yet. Not until we've got something to trade. Or someone.
Feeling that always not yet lost, they decide that the Mallrats wouldn't, of course, have the guts to kill Ram. And so they kidnap Selene in order to bargain for his return, Later, they come across May and use her as a messenger, blindfolding her and taking her to Celine off-screen before letting her go back to report to the Mall Rats. So yeah, what do you make of these new technos, Celine's kidnapping, and their plan to get Ram back?
Do we think then the most exciting thing they've ever done, other than kidnap Celine, is call themselves Wizard and Stats?
Absolutely.
Yes, 100%.
When they that was the highlight of their life.
Like, I was like, I for sure am going to be Wizard. I need to be Wizard. The Wizard of Oz is my favorite.
He had delusions of grandeur.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love that May instantly goes, Warlock, was it?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Warlock, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Of all the techno names that we're given, I like Stats and Wizards the best.
Yeah, they're the best ones.
I always thought the other ones were stupid. I was like, no, no, that is not your name. That's the name you picked to be part of the technos. Stats and Wizards, they were aiming high, okay? And I'm like,
they knew their worth, okay?
They were legends for that.
Yes.
I love it. Even sounds good, Stats and Wizards. Like that's a comic duo. You know what I mean? That's a buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
Stats and Wizards.
Back at it again.
That's as good as Slut and the Falcon. You know what I mean? Like, I want to watch that movie. Stats and Wizards would have hit big in the 80s. I'm telling you, that would have been a primetime show. Stats and Wizards.
Well, they actually sound like a like over here, we used to get a lot of club music in the 90s from like Ibiza. And it sounds like one of the names of one of the bands that would be doing that, European. Yeah. Wizard, call me by your name, you know, that kind of thing.
I kind of like them. Again, the bar is very low here. I kind of like them. I actually would have liked to see how they managed to kidnap Celine without anyone. What the frick was Celine doing that
Where
she was able
was she?
To get kidnapped by these
and
two
why was
idiots?
She not with anyone?
Who like, have who, no weapons, by the
she,
way.
Isn't she the city leader? What the frig? Where is her secret service?
How did Celine not have a weapon? But someone gave May a zapper.
Oh, did you clock when she said it needed to be loaded?
It's so silly.
As well. So those zappers need to be loaded. Loaded with what?
I don't care about these stupid zappers. I don't care. I will not discuss these stupid zappers. I made it through a whole season not discussing these things.
We
I'm
will
not
talk about
start
it
now. Start, you can't you know? Make me, Maggie. You're not my mom.
You are ignoring me so much, I just glossed past them. You're right. Loaded before.
Well, yeah, loaded with. I don't understand. Do they need batteries each time? Like, every time?
Man.
What are they shooting out? What
it
are those lasers?
We're not doing this, you guys. I refuse. I refuse.
I have to know.
I will walk off set. We know nobody knows. There are no answers to your questions. And you know it. You know there were Maybe. Never any answers.
It was poisonous confetti.
I don't understand.
I'm fine with their plan. I'm like, yes, some technos would feel this way. So that makes sense. It makes more sense than if all the technos just got on board with Mega defeating their ruler, okay? Think about it. It's already been established that there are plenty of technos who, only if they think that Ram has been usurped by somebody else, are they willing to take a stand. Mm-hmm. But as long as Ram's there, they're like, hey, sorry, Jay. You know what I mean? Ram's still alive. You said he wasn't. Whatever. You know? So I like the fact there are some, because we don't really get that with any Chosen who are still willing to raise the flag after Joff has been defeated or try to get him out of jail or anything. So I like that there are some technos who were like, nah, I'm not buying this. We got to get our leader back. We got to go back to the way things were, you know? And fine, they kidnapped Celine. I don't know how that's possible. I don't understand where the frick she'd wandered off alone that these guys were able to get her without causing a ruckus. She clearly gave them a fight all the way to the hideout. So I just don't know how they caught her without anybody seeing anything. And that's kind of lame. Especially because, again, when the technos are taken down, it's not like there's chaos for people to disappear into. It's a very calm situation. So where the frick did you go, Celine? Right. Like, where did you go? Where did you wander off to?
And why the heck was she separated? Yeah, from everybody. I don't understand why they weren't.
It makes no sense that she just disappears. Like, I'll buy
Titan. And Price just like, I don't know where she is. It's fine.
How did you guys make it back to the mall without, like, three key members of your group?
She's got bright red hair, guys.
And well, you only realized they're missing when you got back to the mall. Where the frick did Celine go? Oh,
and I guess she wasn't with us.
You mentioned she's got bright red hair, Maggie. Now, we also see that her hair is grown. Is that where she was? She was getting extensions. And they
She definitely got extensions, and we had no idea. That's right. She did change. Yeah, it grew a lot since last season.
There is a tongue-in-cheek joke about Celine being city leader, if you guys caught it, when May is in the bar getting a drink, and I always love Laura's performances. There's always a subtlety to what her character must be thinking. She always plays the character as somebody who has a history in this world, always, and it comes out in everything she delivers. So when she's talking to the bartender and they actually bring up, isn't Celine like the mayor of the city? And like May's like, isn't she like she was like mayor or something. Oh, I don't know. And I just felt somebody put that in there as a joke, because it's been a joke.
Yeah.
Her being city leader and it being literally forgotten by the writers and them never doing anything with it. Does it even matter now that she was city leader? Of course it doesn't. You know what I mean? And I just thought that was hilarious. And I also will give Laura props. When Stats and Wizards approach her, you can actually see the trauma in May's eyes being approached by two technos while she's alone and vulnerable. She's playing it off, but Laura is playing it as somebody who has been tortured by these people before. And I just want to give her flowers. It's so subtle, but just look at her face, her expression, despite what she is saying, look at how her demeanor changes, how on her guard and like threatened she feels by them being there. Not just because, oh, these boys might beat me up. No, it's technos who captured her, held her captive, and tortured her.
Brainwashed for months. Her, yeah.
Yeah, and put her through hell, you know, and she lost the love of her life because of it. You know what I mean? Like, there's just something that Laura brought to that, and I was like, that's not no small feat there, girl. I saw you. I saw what you did.
And it underscores as well that May is one of the most underrated and interesting characters in the show.
I'm so sorry. That was involuntary. I apologize. I'll stop. You go ahead. You can love May. I love that for you.
I also like just that moment. I wish we got more of them, but I love that moment of her just sitting there talking with the bartender, and he goes, so it looks like the mall rats are on top again. And she's like, yeah, aren't they always? And it's just a nice window into what it must be like to be an ordinary person in Tribe World who's not involved in everything that's going on. You know, like, he clearly wasn't involved in taking down the technos. He's just running his bar. It doesn't really matter who's running anything. He's just making a living, serving drinks. And he doesn't seem to have much of an opinion on it. He's the definition of apolitical. You know, he's just like, oh, so they're in charge now. Yeah, seems to be the way, you know. Like, for him, this is just another chapter, another season. And he hasn't been affected. And I wish we got more windows into people like that just surviving in Tribe World, who are not caught up constantly in the drama of Tribe World. They're just making their way. I miss that about season one, really meeting people who, this is how they live in this city. And they're not always part of the main story, you know? And it's like, the mods are the main characters in their own story. But often other people have literally nothing to do with that story and do not care about it at all. Mm-hmm. And the Mallrats and the writers have completely lost sight of that.
Yeah. I think May's response, though, kind of shows how little she thinks of herself as a Mallrat at this time.
Yeah.
I don't think she's ever really saw herself as one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just they've been a place for her to sleep, you know, to eat, like, help her if she needs it. But I think my biggest issue with her is it doesn't matter how much these people, They help her, and, you know, they do give her a home. Like, she still doesn't feel as if she's a part of them.
She's a self-destructive character.
Yes.
And she says that from the moment we meet her. Like, meet her, she's telling Lex that, oh, this group of us.
Then why couldn't they have given her some growth? You know what I mean?
It's like you said about Lex. You want to talk about Lex. Some people just get stuck in place.
But see, he does get stuck in place, but he gets that growth. And then you see that bit of, okay, here's Lex again, you know. But there's still that growth, even in this episode, with how he responds to Pride, right, about Tysan. Like, he snaps at him at first, and Pride goes, hey, I'm concerned too. And Lex immediately is like, you're right, you know? Like, May is kind of in the same boat, but they don't really give her much of that, that growth in that personal aspect, at least not yet.
May has always been treated as a tertiary character. She's rarely a person with her own story. She's usually just a catalyst for other people's stories.
Mm. Yeah. That's fair.
But yeah, I think that says a lot, like you mentioned, that she doesn't think much of herself being a mall rat. And I think, like, she and Ebony have this in common, where they remember every wounded hurt of mm-hmm. someone letting them down or disappointing them or breaking their trust. And they do not put it into, at least May will admit, I broke their trust first, where Ebony will be like, how could you do that to me? And it's like, you tried to kill me, Ebony. And she's like, it was yesterday, Jesus.
You left me for dead on the mm-hmm. side of a mountain, Ebony.
Right, and Ebony will be like, oh, you're still on that, you know? Like, May will at least admit, like, okay, I know, I did that thing. She will take ownership, mm-hmm. even when she makes excuses. She will be like, okay, I got Dal killed, but it wasn't what I was trying to do. I was trying to live.
No, intention means nothing, May.
Right, you know? And I do think it says something, like, she's not, like, celebrating that they won, because for her personal life, nothing has changed.
No.
She still doesn't feel like she has a home.
Well, things are going to change soon.
When she gets a home, she sabotages it often. You know, and she will tell people that you don't want to get close to me, man, because I'm a hot mess. I'll bring you down.
Give her the growth.
Oh,
her and Ruby could have been good friends. Her and Ruby could have been good friends, I think, because I think they both kind of.
May's a tragic figure. She's a tragic character who will all
maybe that's why I have so many issues. It's just I don't see they don't give her much redemption.
No, they don't.
They try to, and then they immediately
snatch it away. Yeah. Yep.
Even worse than they do with Ebony, I think, because Mays are a lot more selfish. I feel like the reason why I feel like they're selfish is because they're smaller things that she's doing, which mean nothing, but why is she betraying her family over nothing, I guess? Whereas Ebony makes these mess over everyone, right?
It's also possible that Ebony's more entertaining to watch.
Fair. Yeah. Maybe.
Like, she is genuinely...
I think it's the pettiness of May that gets me, is what it is.
May has these usually much smaller storylines, and whenever she screws somebody over, it's to protect herself in sometimes the smallest ways.
Alright, cool. That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. So, eagle-eyed viewers know by now to check out the end credits for any possible spoilers that may come. And we get that in spades. We see a tease of the upcoming return of Jack and Ellie, new character Jill, more Zoot shenanigans, and Jay seemingly being involved with both Amber and Trudy. So yeah, did the end credit, and basically this episode, generate enough excitement for the series to come?
The idea of Jay and Trudy just disgusted me. Everything in me just went...
Everything about that last bit of that, was awful. Like, I didn't enjoy that.
That was so much of a heck.
But I'm super excited about Jack and Ellie coming back. Well, even though I don't really care for Ellie, you know, it's good to see some old faces come back, you know. Gel's good too. It's hard. It's really hard with this Zoot thing to put aside what I already know to entertain what's happening now. So like every time I'm watching it, I'm like, oh yeah, but I guess we'll see.
I was excited to see Jelly Absolutely. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. Jack, he's back. Ellie's back. I was intrigued because Ellie looked like she had a time of it in the credits. So I was like, what did they do to my girl? I want to know. I want to hear the story. I felt like, you know, DeZoot, I'd already decided I don't care what that's about, but I guess I'm going to find out. Gail just kind of confused me because she didn't look like she belonged. And I was like, who is this girl? Like, what? She is too cute and pretty and too put together. But you know, I did like the shot of her coming out of the hay. So I was curious, where did they find this pristine orphan? And hoped she'd be interesting. And when I saw Jay with Amber and Trudy, I was not surprised. Amber, I'm like, it's clear he wants Amber, clearly. So he will eventually have a moment at least with her. When I saw him with Trudy, I was like, wait a minute, right?
What's your intention, sir?
I obviously know he and Ebony are going to break up. Like, you guys gave them 2 episodes of being okay together and immediately told us no. And I expected Amber. But I'm like, how does poor Trudy get roped into this? And I was genuinely concerned that Jay and Amber would have a frolic of it and it wouldn't work out. And then, like, Trudy would be the consolation prize. It's a lot worse than that, because that would have at least been acceptable.
So much worse than that.
But it's so much worse than that. And so I was like, wait, I was cautiously concerned. Because it's like, I want Trudy to find love. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but not with that.
Well, but that isn't like
I still liked Jay at the time. I still hadn't been like, I hate this guy. I was more like, okay, I don't really like what's happening with him and Ebony, but I'm, you know, fine. I just wish Amber wasn't the reason they were breaking up. You know what I mean? Like, but I didn't hate Jay yet. And so I was like, okay, I see how her and Jay connect. You know, I could see that working out between them. But I was like, how is this supposed to work with Amber too? Like, does he try it with Amber and it doesn't work because he's a techno and that's how he and Trudy find each other? And again, I kind of wish that's what freaking happened, because that would make way more sense. You know, what we get is way worse. But I was confused when I saw that and a little concerned.
They didn't have to taint Amber and Trudy's relationship any further than it already was. Mm. You know, if they could have had anybody else sleep with Jay, right? And then have Amber swoop in and be like, nah, he's mine. You know, why did it have to be
Celine?
I mean, I wasn't good at many names.
It didn't have to be anybody, but I agree.
But if they were going to go with that route, is what I'm saying. Like, that, it didn't, why Trudy? Why do they always use her as the out? I guess, I don't know. It's,
because for some reason they created Trudy without liking the girl. They just don't seem to think she deserves happiness.
They've never liked her.
And it sucks because she's such a good character. You know what I mean? Like, Antonia plays her so well. And I will say that I know her hair is a little crazy, but this is my favorite outfit of hers.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Maggie, I give up on us ever meeting it somewhere.
You will
in
never
the same
have to worry about
to
a thing, I promise. Because I literally only wear
sweatpants.
First
the Danny denim lingerie and now this.
Don't you listen. I hated that whatever color outfit it was of hers. All right. I was allowed to like the other one because the other one sucked. I don't know why you guys liked it so much. It doesn't make sense to me.
I hate this look on Trudy so much.
Of course you do.
It's like a chaos gremlin came out of her closet and dressed
her. Yeah, and it's perfect.
In the laziest way possible. It does
the
nothing for her
purples
figure.
And it makes me happy.
Oh, the purples. The colors are fine. The outfit itself is. And that blouse. That
you don't
blouse
like
is
that glitter
bait.
Slick down on the front there? Come on.
Oh my goodness.
Come on.
It's the bane of my existence.
It's so good. That close up when she's looking at Mouse, you can just see it. It's like, it looks slick as heck. It's wet. And it's just there.
Her whole outfit just vomits toxic positivity. I hate it.
It's the best thing ever.
I'm so happy it's not the yellow and red one.
I like that one too. So, I mean, I guess shoot me. It's fine. No one likes me or my style.
I like this outfit. I just didn't like the red and yellow one.
Ugh. That was in what? Season 3? End season 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sabine is counting down to Pride's death. I'm counting down to Trudy getting better look. I hate this one so much.
I'm so glad I said something.
But yeah, I mean, let's just go around. What are everyone most looking forward to in season 5?
Ruby. Just lots of Ruby, really. Lots of Liberty. Slade.
Lots of Liberty, yep.
Jack's return.
Yeah.
Mm. The ending.
And I'm thinking Mouse with the Guyans.
Yeah, that's cute.
I'm really looking forward to Slade and Ebony's dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I really like those two together. And I'm looking forward to just more of Liberty. Even when it doesn't even make sense that characters end up there.
Let's go care. Play pool.
Right. I just want to hang out at Liberty. I don't even care that after a while, even Liberty doesn't make all that much sense. I don't care. I want to be there. I don't want to be in this mall anymore. I haven't wanted to be here in a long time. I'm sick of the city. I'm sick. It's let it burn. I don't care. You guys can't make me care about you saving the city or the catatonic idiots in it. I don't care. I'm looking forward to chilling out in Liberty. And I'm looking forward to some of the general chaos of the ridiculous storyline coming up. Because it is ridiculous, but it has its moments where I'm just having a lot of fun.
Oh, there's just so many moments.
I can't wait to meet Gabe.
I'm looking forward to that bromance, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm not, yeah, that's pretty good.
Layden Ram,
I think, like, with Layden, I think it's that she's finally got someone who, I guess is on the same level as her.
Yeah.
In that regard, so it's going to be nice to see that.
Well, Slade's literally going to be her only love interest, who sees her for who she is and is exactly. the only one who never asks her to be anything other than who she
exactly.
is.
Exactly, yep.
Every one of her love interests wanted her to be somebody different. They saw what they saw. You know,
they
so
saw what they wanted to see, yeah.
Right, and were very disappointed when she couldn't live up to that. It wouldn't be that thing. Every
they
single
set their
one
own
of them.
Standards for her to
Or
meet.
They
she
tried to turn her into something, like Zoot trying to break her, you know. Slade's the first person who was like, yeah, she's untrustworthy and probably a psychopath, but I like it. She can be psychopathic as she wants, you know?
But man, those breeds.
He's just like, look, babe, don't make my life too hard. You know what I mean? That's all he cares about. He's like, look, you can be crazy, but if it means we don't have a place to sleep tonight, it becomes a problem. That's where Slade's attitude is. And it's like, I don't think Ebony's ever had anybody who just liked and loved her just as she is.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where it's like, okay, yeah, he accepts. I'm playing with fire, but that's exactly what I like.
Yes, that's where I want. He's right where he wants to be.
That's why there was no such thing as a love triangle between he and Ruby and Ebony. Ruby never stood a chance.
That's the thing is Ruby was feisty and she is feisty, okay? But she's not in the sense that Ebony is.
Yeah.
As soon as they slept together, Ruby was like, wife me up. And Slade was like, oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what she messed up. And Slade was like, nah, babe, like, that's not what this is. You just don't do it for me. And then she was like chasing him. He, you know, it was never, he's like, I like you as a person, but you do not do it for me like that.
And Ebony's like, you know, you're kind of cute. Maybe we'll do it again.
Ebony made him chase her. And he was like, this could kill me, but it's going to be great. Because that's Slade's personality. He's like, that's what he liked. The happiest these two were wreaking havoc together. And I'm like, oh, finally. Yay, Ebony. So I am looking forward to that. I was like, it's about time.
Of course, since we have Callan here, we can't let him go without discussing the end game of his character. So yeah, first question, the revelation that Mega was actually Josh, Slade's younger brother, was quite a shock later on within the show. The events surrounding it also led Mega to tackling the rogue AI version of Zoot within reality space, and dying because of it. So yeah, what did you make of that storyline, and was it a personal or a story-mandated decision to actually kill off Mega?
Yes, that was an interesting one. No, like, we had no idea. As I say, you know, I would get my contracts kind of every month. And so when the scripts would arrive, and usually your script would arrive the night before, so you had to learn everything.
Oh, wow.
For the next day. And I think it was one of the fastest turnaround television series aside from General Hospital at the time. And so I think we were filming a hell of a lot and very quick. And so, sometimes you'd get your amendments in the morning to the script, there'd be a full monologue you had to learn that you hadn't prepared for. And so when we found out that I was Matt's brother, that was a good day. That was funny. I remember reading it and then getting in the car and then arriving at set and going, "Hey man, it turns out we're brothers." Yeah, and so we never really knew what was going to happen as actors, or at least I didn't. Maybe like Meryl or Caleb, they got input into what happened with Lex and Ebony. But so far as I was concerned, I just turned up and read the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was. I guess it was their way of tying up the loose ends, and so I guess it was mandated by the story. But yeah, I thought it tied it off well.
Yeah, no, it was a really good story. Just I'm sure I knew the turnaround for the show was really quick, but the night before, I didn't know it was that quick.
Yeah. There was a lot. You could expect changes pretty much to every script, so you would learn everything. Knowing that in the morning, probably there would be something different about what you had memorized. Which, that's why there was a lot of laughing and forgetting your lines, because you'd remembered something completely different and tried to memorize it.
I was just about to ask you that. How good is your memory like back then? Were you able to remember most of the script? Or
sometimes they would use certain turns of phrase that I wasn't familiar with, and those could catch me up. But otherwise, it was okay. It was pretty good with memory. My memory is pretty good when it comes to memorizing.
Ah, cool.
Memorizing is fine. Like dates and what I had for breakfast, that sort of stuff is terrible. But I remember, the phone number of my grandmother and the first house that I lived in, but not where I should be tomorrow.
I wish I had your memory. Mine's bad.
Yeah, mine's selectively good, I guess. I just wish I got to do the selecting.
Yeah. I kind of what if. So if Mega hadn't died at the end of season 5, what would you have liked to have seen done with his character? So, do you think he was primed for redemption, or do you think he would innately return to his old calculating ways? For example, could he instead actually have patched up?
That's what I thought they were going. That's the direction I thought they were going for. I thought they were going to make Mega he was going to become a good dude and kind of try and mend his ways with Blade.
Yeah, it did feel like that. It felt like he could. He had that.
But maybe that's the point. Maybe that's what the writers wanted you. Maybe I just got carried along with exactly what they wanted us to think.
True, yeah.
Because it would have been nice, I think, and it would have been fun. I think we could have. There could have been a lot of mileage in that story.
It was a very selfless death, trying to save your brother and stop.
Yeah. Oh man, that was the most uncomfortable death scene. Yeah, that was such an uncomfortable situation. Just purely because of how quick the turnaround for the show was, because you're shooting three different angles at the same time, so you don't have to reset. And so, yeah, you're kind of angled and laying there to get every the close-ups and the mid shots all at the same time. And so it's a lot of shifting emotions and then holding the positions and then we're gonna go close up, and yeah, it was
awkward.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, this is a good one. If there was any character or actor that you could have worked with more on the show or that you hadn't, who would it be and why?
I really enjoyed working with Michael Wesley Smith. But I think that's a selfish reason, just because I enjoy his company.
Mm-hmm.
I wish Matt and I had more scenes together. That would have been cool. That's what I was hoping, you know, could have happened in the future. I just enjoyed working with everyone because it was such a different experience with everyone. But I had the most fun just being silly with Caleb, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Tom I would have liked to work more with as well. We had, you know, because a lot of these guys, we had a lot of work where we weren't in the same room together. I was either like torturing them through VR or something, or watching them over a monitor. But I didn't really have much time with anyone except for Megan. I think Megan and I had the most time together.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. Would it be nice to have more scenes?
Yes, anyone else.
Anyone else apart from the computer.
Me and how the amount of deep looks I had to share with that monitor. And then just hold it there, Kaylin. Yeah. Hold the face. Yeah. And thinking, devious smile.
We will appreciate it, though. It was nice to see this character. Is there anything you're up to now? Any shout-outs you can give us?
Now I'm just, I've been tattooing for the last 20 years. And so I'm just, I'm still doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to tattoo as many people as I can. Yeah. But shout out to my, the studio in Lucerne in Switzerland. Come by and get a tattoo if you would like something made by me.
Awesome. I'll be sure, if you send me the link, I'll be sure to add that to the episode itself, so people can click on it and go to it.
Oh yes. I'll give you all my contact details will be there for you.
Honestly, Kaylin, thank you so much for giving up your time and being a part of our Series 5 premiere. It was so awesome to finally get to talk to you.
Thank you very much for having me, and I'm so sorry again that I have been difficult to track down, but I'm really glad that we got to sit down and get this out there.
But yeah, thank you so much.
No problem.
All right, cool. So that brings Series 5, Episode 1 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and we'll see you next time for Episode 2. So until then, bye.
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 Bye.